The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Glad to be the man filling in for the woman tonight. I'm very proud to have Leslie Marshall's audience with me tonight. Leslie has entrusted her audience to me, and I'm very honored that she does. And I guess it's why I approach with a little bit of trepidation the subject matter of my discussion tonight. Tonight I want to talk about the history of Israel and do so backwards. You'll understand why as I go throughout the broadcast. Now, because Leslie and I are close, personally and professionally, because we're good friends, because she trusts me with her audience, partly that's because we agree on so many things. I no doubt whether it's the oil spill or financial reform or taxes, Social Security, the war in Iraq, immigration, you name it, Leslie and I are going to have a lot of agreement. I'm not 100% convinced she would agree with me tonight, and that's okay. But I want to be clear that I'm speaking for myself and not for Leslie. She, of course, it's her show. She is welcome to her own views at any time, and I'm sure she'll announce them. But it's fascinating to me that I approach the subject of Israel with such trepidation in an era where I'm coming out, as it were, as a Jew and as someone who is supportive of the state of Israel. Not that it does everything right. I would never say that about any nation on earth, but that I firmly believe in Israel's right to exist and right to exist as a Jewish state. And I find it interesting that I'm coming out in this way and that in many respects I do so with much more trepidation than I do talking about gay rights, for example. Liberals, pretty much one to all, support gay civil rights, as they should, as liberals support female civil rights, women's rights, and African-Americans and Latinos, and really the equality of all peoples. But when it comes to Israel, some liberals, it seems, switch sides. At least that's my perception. They will be against the only democracy in the Middle East, and I'm excluding Turkey from the Middle East for this calculation. I recognize Turkey's a democracy. We'll be talking about Turkey later on. And instead, they'll support some pretty awful dictatorships over Israel. And I've been trying to figure out when that happened and why that happened. I'm certainly not saying that's true of all liberals or even most liberals. But I do think that the situation has changed throughout history. If you go back to the 40s, you'll find it was the anti-communist liberals that were most strongly supportive of the Jews as they were heading to death camps. You find that the far left and the far right, the fascists and the communists, disagreed on much, but agreed on one thing. They both hated Jews. Hitler and Stalin hated Jews, and of course they worked together to annihilate the Jewish people. Hitler more than Stalin. Stalin had his own plan to completely annihilate the Jewish people, and thankfully died before that plan could be put into effect. But it was anti-communist liberals, people like Harry Truman, that were so strongly supportive of a Jewish state, when it was the right-wingers who were the Arabists. They were the ones who were saying, the Arab states have oil, they have power, Israel is tiny, it's the size of New Jersey. Instead of supporting those few Jews, why not support the greater Arab states? You can get a lot more oil that way. And Harry Truman, to his credit, ignored the Arabists and decided to go with what he believed was right rather than with what he thought was the most profitable. Into the 50s and 60s, again, liberals were pulling for Israel, understanding that existence was on edge while the Arab states were trying to stop it. On into the Six-Day War, you find liberals cheering Israel, again under threat of annihilation, again surviving, again doing quite well. And even into the 90s, when I taught a course on Jewish history, there was still a general understanding that liberals generally supported Israel. They may not always agree with Israel's policies, but they firmly supported Israel's right to exist. In the 1990s, I taught Jewish history twice at my synagogue to students aged 18 to 82. I taught 4,000 years of Jewish history in 40 weeks. That was the name of the course, and I did a lot of research for it. And tonight, I'm going to try to teach Israeli history backwards, and I'll explain why as we go along. We'll start with the present day, and we'll go backwards. Now, why am I doing this? Well, I want to answer a couple questions. Questions I've raised and questions others have raised with me. One question I want to answer is that why is it that every time Israel acts, every time Israel even makes a mistake, why is it that people question whether or not Israel should exist? God knows the United States has made many, many, many mistakes. But it's very rare you'll hear someone question whether the United States has a right to exist. The same is true of France and Canada. The same is true of Saudi Arabia, Iran, to some extent, even North Korea. Though that one, maybe we should question its existence. But I digress. Why is it that when this secular democracy makes a mistake, people question whether or not it should exist? The other question I'm trying to answer today is a question that was asked of me recently. I'm on Pacifica Radio, many of you know, and that tends to take a left of liberal point of view. And I was asked, who are the indigenous people of Palestine? I had a real problem with that question. Again, we'll talk about it. First of all, by defining the land as Palestine, it was clear the questioner's point of view. And it was also clear to me that this person felt that Palestinians were the indigenous people of Palestine. And he was saying in the context of Helen Thomas's famous quote, the one I talked about last Friday, the one that said that Jews should go back to Germany and Poland. If you haven't heard that clip, well, I'll play it for you right now.
Any comments on Israel? We're asking everybody today. Any comments on Israel?
Tell them to get the hell out of Palestine.
Ooh. Any better comments on that?
Helen is one.
Remember, these people are occupied. And it's their land. It's not German. It's not Poland.
So where should they go? What should they do?
They go home.
Where's the home?
Poland.
So the Jews...
Germany.
You think the Jews go back to Poland and Germany?
And America and everywhere else.
Now, you've probably heard that. Indeed, it was a listener here on Leslie's show that brought that comment to my attention. And let me say, first of all, I was very, very saddened to hear it. I've been very nice to Helen Thomas. She's been very nice to me. She has honored me by being on a one-hour show of The Inside Scoop in Washington that you can still find on my website at marklevineradio.com, where we had a wonderful chat for 1 hour on television on every American president from Jack Kennedy to Barack Obama. When she started to say something about Israel, I have to admit I deftly changed the topic, because I wanted to have respectful conversation. I didn't want to challenge her. Maybe that's my own fault. Maybe I should have. But my goal was really to celebrate her progress, her long time being a Washington reporter, her, frankly, the things she did on behalf of women as one of the first female correspondents. And I didn't care to get in an argument with her over Israel. I knew that Helen Thomas was not a big supporter of Israel. And I decided to scuttle over that. Again, if you think I was wrong, you can let me know when you call in. But here's what I want to deal with. I want to deal with the substance of what Helen said, because some people don't understand why it was offensive at all. Here's what she said. She said, Jews should go home. And she defined the Jewish home as Poland and Germany. Now, Helen Thomas is a very intelligent woman. She is almost 90 years old. She's been around a long time. Surely she knows that Jews are, the name Jew, the etymology of the word Jew comes from Judea. Unlike Christians and Muslims whose name comes from the religion they practice, Jews don't come from Judaism. Jews come from Judea, the ancient name for the southern part of the land of Israel. Judea comes from the tribe of Judah, one of the 12 tribes of Israel. That's where the name comes from. And Jews come from Judea, much like Arabs come from Arabia. Now, Jews have had a different course of history, which we're going to talk about, traveling all over the earth. While some stayed at home in Judea, the majority of Jews had to leave their home back when the Romans conquered the Jewish state, the last Jewish state before Israel, sometime in the first and second centuries. But surely she knew that Jews were indigenous to Judea, to Israel. We'll get back to what indigenous means. By the way, I looked up a definition of indigenous because I wanted to think about what it meant. And the definition given in this dictionary was, indigenous peoples are any ethnic group who inhabit a geographic region with which they have the earliest known historical connection. The earliest known historical connection. Well, obviously, the oldest people with the earliest known historical connection to the land of Israel is the Israelites. To the land of Judea is the Jews. Now, there have been many subsequent peoples since then, and many say, hey, there's some kind of statute of limitations. After 2,000 years, you're no longer an indigenous people. That's why I want to take Israeli history backwards over the next 3 hours. We'll get to that. But I want you to think about indigenous peoples and whether they should always remain in charge, whether it be Jews or Arabs or anybody else. Who are the indigenous peoples of the United States? We know quite well. They are Native American tribes. The Hopi and the Sioux and the Navajo and 100 other tribes, probably thousands, hundreds certainly of other tribes, who were the native peoples of America. Now let's say somebody were to say, as Helen Thomas has said, what should the United States do? Get the hell out of Native American lands. Can you say something nice about the United States? Well, we should recognize that Native Americans are under occupation, and it's time for the so-called Americans, that is, all of us who are not descendant of the Native American tribes, to leave. Where should we go? We should go home. And, of course, if you send Americans home, much like sending Israelis home, there's a difference, of course, because some Jews have been in Israel all along. But if you send all of us who are not Native American tribes home, I guess where do you send me? I'm Jewish. Do you send me to Israel? Where do you send me? That's where my ancestors are from. Do you send where my ancestors were from 100 years ago? Russia, Poland, Austria, Germany? What about those of you that are Irish immigrants, English immigrants, German immigrants? What about those of you who are African American? An African American person came up to me just last night as part of the Raucous Caucus. I was doing a show on the oil spill, but they come and I do the shows live, and they was telling me afterwards and telling me that they believed, they agreed with Helen Thomas. And I said, well, what if someone said that all the African Americans should go back to Africa? Would you not consider that racist? And the crowd splits. Most of African Americans did consider that racist. This woman did not consider it racist. I think it is. I think to tell African Americans who did not come to America of their own volition, or to tell descendants of immigrants who did not come to America of their own volition, sorry, you live in Santa Barbara, California, or Buffalo, New York, or Kansas City, Missouri, you need to sell your house because your great-great-grandparents were German and go back to Germany. I think we might laugh. And if we realize the person is serious, we might find it offensive. And that's America. That's a case where the case is clear-cut, where the indigenous peoples clearly are not white or black. They are Native Americans. Indeed, a much stronger case should be made that the 99% of us that are not Native Americans should go back to our home countries, save for a second where I should go, because you know, what's my home country? It's Judea, so I don't know. I mean, certainly Russia and Poland, when my great-great-grandparents lived there, did not give them equal rights. But leave that aside, a much stronger case should be made that America should get the hell out of Native American territory than can be made about Israel. So what I want to do in the next 3 hours or so, and of course, I welcome your calls, suggestions, comments, disagreements. Again, just disagree with me agreeably if you can. That's all I ask. Is look at Israeli history backwards to try to answer the question, who are the indigenous people in this land? Who are the rightful owners of this land? And why is it that every time Israel makes a mistake, people seek to destroy it. 888-653-7543. 888-6-LESLIE. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall, and happy to do so. I'm discussing today Israel's history backwards, trying to answer the question, why is it that every time the state of Israel makes a mistake, people question whether or not it should exist, question whether or not it should be annihilated, wondering why Israel is the only nation on the planet today that actively has other nations seeking its annihilation. You can't say the same even of North Korea, even of Iran. And it's not just annihilation of the Israeli government, which of course is a democratic government elected by its people. Again, you can disagree with the government. That's fine. You can say that you think the Israeli government is wrong, and I might well agree with you on certain points. But it's the annihilation of really, what, the Jewish people? Helen Thomas was asked, okay, you want Israel, quote unquote, to get the hell out of Palestine, quote unquote. What does that mean? What that really means is Jews should not be living anywhere in Judea. Jerusalem, I guess, should be Judenrein. I don't know. Is that what she's saying? Go back to Germany. Go back to Poland, the land of the death camps. What was she saying? Was she saying that Jews are not from Judea? Is that what she was saying? That the Jews were some German and Polish group pretending to be from the Middle East? Did she not recognize that the majority of Israeli population is from the Middle East? Yeah, there are Jews there that came from Germany and Poland. They are the minority. The majority of Jews in Israel to this day are Sephardim, which is a Hebrew word meaning from Spain, interestingly enough, but is a way that Jews describe Jews who came from Muslim lands. Not just Spain, but Iraq and Egypt and Yemen and Tunisia, Morocco, and yes, and Israel. The group of Jews that have been there all along and never left. So this is an argument I increasingly hear. I've even heard some admittedly crazy people suggest the Jewish people are not from Judea at all. I wonder why they call us Jews. But our Khazars, the kingdom that existed in the 11th century that converted to Judaism, we'll get there. We're going to do Israeli history backwards. We'll eventually get there. But it's a very strange argument. So I want to take, I've done lots of shows on Israeli history. I certainly have. But when I do them, I never know where to start. Do I start with the Canaanites? Do I start with the Bible? Sometimes I feel like people are falling asleep when I do that. So I'm going to start from today, after the break. Take it from the current situation today and the Gaza boat lift and everything. And then take it backwards year by year, decade by decade, century by century, until I've tried to find an answer to this question. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. I'm happy to do so. My topic tonight is the history of Israel backwards. I've taught Jewish history in the past. In fact, the name of my course was 4,000 Years and 40 Weeks. The general way you teach history is forwards. But with the state of the Middle East, you kind of don't know where to begin. So I'm not going to begin anywhere. I'm going to begin with the ending. Let's talk about what's been in the news recently, what you have heard about. You've heard about the Free Gaza Flotilla. What you may not know is that this flotilla has been trying to break the Israeli blockade for several years now. This one was a little different from the others because they joined in with a radical terrorist group from Turkey. The name of that group was the IHH. The Humanitarian Relief Foundation. You don't have to believe me when I call it a terrorist group. The United States has named it as an official terrorist entity. And we now know that none of the European lawmakers and journalists and business leaders and Holocaust survivor who were aboard the flotilla fought with the Israeli troops. None of them. In fact, many of them tried to protect the Israeli troops. We know that 5 of the 6 ships in the fleet, nobody attacked the Israeli troops. We know that the recent voyage by the Rachel Corrie from Ireland, nobody attacked Israeli troops. Every single person that attacked Israeli troops on the one ship, the Mavi Marmara, the ship that was considered too big to disable, and whether or not Israel could have disabled in other ways, we can discuss. But my point is that all of the violence occurred to this one ship, and every single person killed was a member or a volunteer for the IHH, this group, this Turkish group, that's been declared a terrorist entity by the United States. I remind you that both Israel and Egypt begged Turkey to ask the people on the boat to deliver the humanitarian supplies to Gaza through Israel, rather than doing it directly, so that Israel could check and make sure there were none of the rockets there that had been used to rain down on Israeli citizens. The people refused. You've heard the clip. I played it Friday. If you want me to repeat it, I'll be happy to. It's on my website, marklevineradio.com, where Israel quite clearly tells them, you know what? What the heck? Let's play it again.
Mavi Marmara, you are approaching an area of hostilities, which is under a naval blockade. The Gaza area, coastal region, and Gaza Harbor are closed to all maritime traffic. The Israeli government supports delivery of humanitarian supplies to the civilian population in the Gaza Strip and invites you to enter the Ashdod port. Delivery of the supplies in accordance with the authorities' regulations will be through the formal land crossings and under your observation, after which you can return to your home ports aboard the vessels on which you arrived.
Negative. Our destination is Gaza. Our destination is Gaza. Now, to be clear, Israel has kept true with its word. When the Rachel Corrie came, the Israelis checked the ship. It docked at Ashdod, the Israeli port. They took all of the humanitarian aid and delivered it to Israel. The six ships, to Gaza. Of course, to Gaza, to international agencies in Gaza. The six ships, five of which were successfully boarded, and the sixth ship, the Mavi Marmara, their aid, Israel has tried to send to Gaza, but Hamas, the government that rules Gaza, refuses. They don't want any humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza unless they control it, unless they get to take it first. Interestingly, some people have complained, well, but what about... We understand why Israel doesn't want rockets and arms. And, of course, there was two shipments of very severe weapons sent by the government of Iran, which funds Hamas, which has control of the client state in Gaza and supports the terrorist entity that runs the country. The question is, well, we understand why Israel doesn't want weapons, but what about cement? Cement used to rebuild homes. What about that? Well, what you may not know is that Israel has said that cement is okay as well, as long as it is delivered to international bodies. In other words, if you've got a UN organization that's overseeing the rebuilding of a house, Israel's fine with giving cement. And in fact, they've done so many times. But they don't want the money, the cement going to Hamas, which uses it to manufacture rockets and bunkers. Seems kind of fair, don't you think? The other thing I think that's misstated about the current situation is people exaggerate how bad it is in Gaza. Now, it's not like the United States, clearly. It's not a pleasant place. Even though Israel has shipped 200 million pounds of humanitarian aid just in calendar year 2010, about 100 trucks a day. And if you look at the shops in Gaza, they're full of food. There's fancy restaurants. There is poverty in Gaza, to be sure, maybe not as bad as in Cairo, Egypt. But there's certainly poverty, and most people do rely on foreign aid. I'm not saying it is a pleasant place. So how do we get to this place? Let's go backwards in history and find out why we're here. The first question I have is, why is Turkey so supportive of this terrorist organization? And to do that, you've got to understand a little bit about Turkey. Turkey... Going back just a couple years in history, Turkey is a very successful, secular Muslim state. It's not even really a Muslim state. It's just a state that has a majority of Muslims, like the United States has a majority of Christians. It's simply a state that is secular, that is elected. Frankly, it's been a democracy ever since the 1920s. Certainly the most successful democracy with a majority Islamic population in the world by far. Turkey and Israel used to be close friends. They even had military training together. But Turkey elected a prime minister by the name of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And Prime Minister Erdogan is the first openly Islamic, as it were, politician to be elected in Turkey, someone who disagrees with a lot of the secular Turkish government. And again, I'm not talking about people's right to practice their religion. I, of course, support that. I'm talking about the government itself being of a certain religion. And he's got a certain sympathy, shall we say, for Islamic terrorists. And let's just say he's not very nice to Israel. Again, I've noted that everyone killed were people that attacked the Israeli soldiers, and all of them were from this second group, the IHH, not from the Free Gaza Movement. What's the IHH? This is a movement that was formed to provide support to Hamas. That's what they do. They want to help the terrorists that control it, to control Gaza. And by the way, to be clear, Hamas, as I'm sure you know, not only believes in the annihilation of Israel, not only believes in Israel's destruction, but also believes that there should be no elections in Gaza, that it should control Gaza now and forevermore. And anyone that disagrees, anyone, even people that hate Israel but don't think that Hamas should be in sole control of Gaza, gets killed, gets tortured, notably those that support Fatah, the rival group, the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian group in charge of the West Bank. So to be clear, why is Prime Minister Erdogan trying to help the IHH? Well, for one thing, the IHH has done a lot to help Prime Minister Erdogan. They've been saying very positive things on his behalf. And sad to say, when they have anti-Israel rallies in Turkey, a lot of people come out in support. This is Prime Minister Erdogan talking about what happened when this terrorist group attacked Israeli soldiers who were trying to enforce the blockade. And they, at first, of course, as I'm sure you know, Israeli soldier, one was unconscious, two were shot, they were captured, they were held by the IHH, the Israeli commandos came to free them, and nine people, unfortunately, were killed. Prime Minister Erdogan said, "The heart of humanity has taken one of her heaviest wounds." Yet he didn't condemn the Iranian fraudulent election. He calls Israel's action state terrorism and a bloody massacre and an adolescent rootless state, and says this attack is like 9/11 for Turkey. Like 9/11. Funny, I don't recall people in the World Trade Center going out and attacking any people in the Taliban. For Prime Minister Erdogan, an attack on Israeli soldiers is much like, well, civilians being innocently killed. Why has Turkey changed its mind? To do that, we have to go further back in the past, which I'll do after the next break. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall, expressing my own views, not hers. She can speak her own mind. For the moment, I've got the microphone, and I want to try to give the history of Israel backwards. We're starting, of course, with the Gaza flotilla, which has been in the news so much, and trying to understand why Turkey, historically a friend of Israel, has been very anti-Israel lately. A lot of it has to do with its new prime minister, Erdogan, who is riding high in the polls the more he condemns Israel. He's also someone who's been fighting against the Kurds. And by the way, for the record, I support a Kurdish state. I always have. I think every people deserves at least one state, maybe not two or three or four, but at least one state where they can live safe and unafraid. Also, America has very much catered to Turkish sensibilities about the Armenian genocide. Now, this is a genocide that Turkey, underneath the Ottoman Empire, committed 100 years ago. Why can't we tell the truth about that? But, well, we've bent over backwards to try to appease Turkish sensibilities. Israel, of course, I'm looking right here, there's a picture in the New York Times, May 28th, 8/10, has this wonderful tent set aside for the activists should they come to Ashdod, the Israel. Of course, they didn't choose to do that. We've got tables and chairs and internet connections and everything. They, of course, chose confrontation rather than cooperation. But where is Turkey coming from? Well, to not understand that, you have to go back 2 weeks earlier in time to when Turkey reaches a deal, a nuclear deal, with Brazil and with Iran. Now, this is a very interesting deal. You may remember that Iran was at least considering President Obama's plan to take their nuclear material and give it to Russia, and in return they'd be given other nuclear material that cannot be used to make a bomb, because Iran claims it only wants it for humanitarian medical needs. So the idea was ship off the bad stuff to Russia, and Russia will supply enough nuclear material that can't become a bomb for your humanitarian needs. Well, Iran resisted that, which begs the question, if Iran wants it for humanitarian needs, why would they resist nuclear fuel for humanitarian needs? Kind of also begs the question with Gaza. If Gaza wants food for humanitarian needs, why does Hamas allow the food in for humanitarian needs? And Turkey was helping Iran. Turkey, in fact, combining with Brazil, is trying to do a new plan. And this plan lets Turkey and Brazil take some of Iran's nuclear material, but leave them enough for one atomic bomb. Also the right to take back the uranium anytime they want. Because Iran was concerned if Russia took their uranium, well, they wouldn't have enough back to make a bomb. Now this, of course, is coming, we're very close to the 1 year anniversary of the Iranian stolen election of June 12th. That'll be this Saturday. I fully expect there to be protests against that dictatorship in the streets of Iran. So Turkey was very much helping Iran both avoid its own people and international scrutiny. Now, why would Turkey do this? Well, part of it is Prime Minister Erdogan and his own particular philosophy. He wants Turkey to be a leader of Muslims in the world. And it's really too bad, because what I see from Turkey and what I see from a lot of critics of Israel is inconsistency. Just a couple weeks ago, there were almost 100 Ahmadi Muslims. There's a dispute over whether the Ahmadi people are Muslim or not. Muslims, most of them say Ahmadis are not Muslims. Ahmadis insist they are Muslim. I tried to understand the difference. I went through the Quran. I couldn't get it, but I've never claimed to be an Islamic scholar. The point is that these 100 innocent people in Pakistan were sitting in a mosque and praying when the Pakistani Taliban came in, closed the one door to the mosque, and started shooting men, women, and children. It was an awful, terrible, disgusting terrorist act against innocent people praying in a mosque. But I haven't heard Turkey complain about that. And I haven't heard actually much even discussion about that. In fact, Pakistan has, it's declared that the Ahmadi are not Muslims and said it's a criminal offense for them to act or say anything that can be deemed Islamic. That's not good for this persecuted people. I should note the Ahmadi Muslims were the first Muslim group to condemn the Times Square plot, to condemn the attack of 9/11. And one of the reasons why they're not considered Muslim is because they believe in peace and waging jihad not with weapons but with words. Now, I have no doubt the vast majority of Muslims worldwide also believe in peace, but I do not condone the persecution of this particular group. My point is that Turkey wasn't acting because of some unique persecution of Israel's. Everyone has a right to condemn any actions of any government, including, of course, the Israeli government. Indeed, I myself argued on this program that perhaps Israel should have taken more steps to disable the ship and tow it to Ashdod rather than boarding it. Israel made a mistake. They thought that the people on the ship were peaceful. They thought the people on the ship wouldn't attack. They arrived with paintball guns. They clearly were not prepared for the violence that occurred. In any case, why is Turkey acting the way it did? Well, because it's made this deal with Iran. And one of the things that I think has to be made clear is that Turkey is an elected government. We can condemn Turkish actions just like we can condemn Israel's actions. But the one thing you will never, ever hear me do is challenge the right of Turkey to exist, challenge its nationhood, argue that Turkey should be annihilated. Turkey is a democracy. I firmly hope the Turkish people will elect someone other than Prime Minister Erdogan. I do. I admit it. I don't like the guy. I don't think he's been particularly good for Turkey or for international relations. But I will never argue that Turkey doesn't have a right to exist. And one of the things I want to explore this hour and the next couple of hours is why it is that critics of Israel are always suggesting that Israel should not exist, rather than simply saying, I disagree with the actions of the Israeli government, and I'll tell you why. That's what I want to explore over the next 3 hours. I've got Thor from Santa Barbara on the line. Thor, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Mr. Levine. Nice
Thank
to meet you.
You
know, I'm half Jewish, and you know, I've been following the events my whole life since the 1960s. And, you know, people who are declared terrorists, you know, Sea Shepherd is a terrorist group. I think at times Greenpeace has been referred to as a terrorist group.
Not by the United States government.
Yeah, you know, this has been tossed around. But in general, I find whenever there's a dispute like this between Israel and, you know, a neighbor, the picture that's painted usually by the person who represents Israel is usually not an entirely accurate statement, or the explanation, I feel, is so slanted that there is not a whole lot of honesty being put out by the Israeli side of the argument. Now, I believe Israel absolutely has the right to exist, but I would like to see it possibly give back some land that it took and allow those other countries to exist peacefully around it. I don't think it's been doing the greatest job of making friends with its neighbors.
What about Egypt and Jordan, who have peace treaties with Israel?
Well, they've been doing pretty good with those countries. And, you know, I think, for instance, you had commented earlier they don't want rockets coming in.
Right.
Well, of course not. But there's a whole bunch of supplies there that, you know, yeah, I could say, well, that could be used for this, or that could be used to build a bunker or whatever. But most of the people are just innocent people. That whole population of those two occupied or, you know, quarantined areas.
Thor, how do you feel about Israel saying, and we have to take a break, but you're welcome to stay into the next hour. I want to know when we come back how you feel about Israel saying, we're fine with cement going in, but we want to make sure the cement is used for houses and not for rockets and bunkers. They will deliver the cement to international groups that, like the United Nations, groups that aren't necessarily pro-Israel, but they will use it to build houses, not bunkers. Hamas has said no. They will only have cement if Hamas can use it as Hamas wants. And I want to know who you think is right in that regard. We're going to continue our march backwards in Israeli history at the top of the hour. You can join Thor on the line, 888-653-7543. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. The thoughts expressed are my own. I'll stand up for them. Don't blame Leslie. Blame me. And it's okay to blame me. I don't care. You know, call in. As long as you're nice to me, you can disagree with anything I say. 888-653-7543. I'm talking about Israel, a dangerous topic to be sure. Risking everything here. But I feel it needs to be said. I feel that I shouldn't hide anymore. Yes, I support the right of Israel to exist. And my question, as I go through Israeli history, and I'm going to do it backwards today. I'm going to start with the present and go past. It's interesting. Even when you start with the present, we had a caller on the line, Thor, who talked about the fact that Israel should give certain lands back and so forth. See, already, to talk about the present, you have to start referring to the past. And I'm going to move to the past in just a minute. But my first question is 2010, today, June 2010. Who are the indigenous peoples in the region? Well, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, indigenous means having originated in and being produced, growing, living, or occurring naturally in a particular region or environment. All right. Originated in? Jews originated in Israel. They originated in Judea. Today, growing, living, occurring naturally? Well, the Jews are a majority in the state of Israel, in the Jewish state. They are, today, in 2010, the indigenous peoples. Now, wait, you may say, but what happened beforehand? I'll get there. I promise you, I'm going back in history. I will get there. It's hard to argue, though, that in 2010, the great majority of Israelis were born there, living there, and will probably die there. They are from there. What are you going to do with all these peoples? Well, you've heard Helen Thomas. Helen Thomas would ship all the indigenous peoples, the people who are today in Israel, all the Jews. She wouldn't do that to the Arabs. All the Jews, she would ship them away somewhere, Germany, Poland, somewhere else, to what she called their home, Jews' home. Presumably she wouldn't touch the Arabs. In this way, by the way, I think what she says mirrors what Jewish fanatics say. Meir Kahani, a man considered so racist that he wasn't even allowed in the Jewish parliament, the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. I shouldn't say the Jewish parliament, it's the Israeli parliament. In fact, there are Arabs also in the Knesset, in the Israeli parliament. But Meir Kahani was not allowed there because he wanted to ship the Arabs out. He was the flip side of what Helen Thomas wanted to do. And again, I like Helen Thomas, so I was very sorry that she said what she said, but I do want to deal with the subject of what she said. Recognizing there is in Israel, of course, a minority Arab population. Of course they are there. Indeed, there is no country in the Middle East, no Arab country in the Middle East. If we don't count Turkey, so it's not an Arab country, it's a Turkish country. And certainly no Arab country in the Middle East gives its own citizens more rights than Israel gives its Arab citizens. They are freer, the Arabs of Israel, than any Arab anywhere in the Arab world. Pretty extraordinary, although they are, of course, a minority. And they are also, of course, indigenous, right now, in 2010. So what are the Arabs on the West Bank? So-called Palestinian Arabs. We'll get to where that name came from as we move backward in history. Well, they're also indigenous, to be sure, right now. They live there. They work there. Many of them originated there, most of them probably. And they're being ruled by the Palestinian Authority. Some 98% of the Arabs in the West Bank are ruled by the Palestinian Authority. There's some 2% that are beyond the security wall. We can discuss what they are. I mean, you can't always live in a country where your people are the majority. But the vast, vast majority of the Arabs of the West Bank are living under the Palestinian Authority. And interestingly, Israel, which still has soldiers in the area, we can talk about why as we go in the past, has reduced its checkpoints dramatically from 42 down to only 12. Because there's been very little violence in the West Bank. Because Mahmoud Abbas, although he, like most of the Palestinian Authority, has corruption issues, is at least, I believe, committed to a peaceful settlement. And the vast majority of decisions made that affect Palestinians' lives in the West Bank are made by the Palestinian Authority, with Israel there to some extent. But there's no question they are the indigenous peoples. What about the Jewish settlements? Well, right now, in 2010, the Jews are the indigenous peoples of those settlements. They are the majority. And indeed, the suggested solution that's been proposed is one that would let the Jews, the vast majority of Jews live in Israel with an Arab minority, and the vast majority of Arabs to live in the West Bank with or without, I'm not sure, a Jewish minority. So that's the situation right now. The question is, why are we where we are, and how did we get here? Now, Thor, are you still on the line with me? Did we lose Thor?
Hi, I am right here.
Okay.
May I respond?
Yes, please do.
I just want to say, you know, the settlement, that's pretty much recent news.
Right, we're going to go back in history and talk about
it. I just don't like it. I think it's aggravating the situation. And then anytime there's checkpoints, fences, or walls containing people, I mean, it's somewhat in the spirit of the Polish ghetto or even some sort of a concentration area. And
really?
I
don't remember the
political move for the Israelis to be behaving that way.
Can you tell me when the Jews sent suicide?
Hold on.
You compared it to the ghetto. That's a very, very, very strong statement. So I want.
Well, I said in the spirit of. I didn't compare
well,
it to.
Well, okay.
It's not the same thing.
Well, of course not, because
there really is no comparison to that.
Right.
But
okay.
I'm saying in the spirit of that, it's not good politically. It looks.
Why were the walls set up, Thor?
Well, you tell me.
Oh, very easy. Sure. Because
because
people from the West Bank were going into Israeli cities and blowing up buses with suicide bombs. In fact, if you remember back in 05 and 06, there were hundreds of suicide bombers blowing up everything from bar mitzvahs to wedding halls to
Correct.
Movie theaters.
Now,
here's the thing, Thor, since Israel, let me say Thor, and then you can respond. Since Israel has built the security wall, there've been almost none from the West Bank, zero, zilch. So obviously the wall has been successful in keeping out the bad guys. Right.
You know, we can do that with the border on Mexico, too. But
right. But I don't know any Mexicans that are trying to blow up American cities. Do you?
In the long term, you know, I'm really asking you. I mean, they're going to have to come up with some sort of a peace where both sides are happy and that the Palestinians, who, by the way, I don't think are all Arab. I think there are Christian Palestinians. Am I mistaken?
Well, it depends on how you define Arab. I think most people would say that there are Muslim and Christian Arabs. You could argue that there are Jewish Arabs as well. So it all depends on sort of your definitions.
Okay,
but many Christian Arabs, both in Israel and in the Palestine Authority, are split because they're not. Many of them are opposed to Israel, but some are very supportive, and many of them are oppressed by the Muslim majority. And so the Christians often feel in between, frankly.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Well, you know, I'm just looking for the long-term solution. I would like to see that both peoples be given an acceptable situation so that this doesn't flare up into World War III.
Nothing would please me
more. I don't
want
there to be an Armageddon.
No, nothing would please me more, Thor. You listened to the speaker from Friday, I'm sure, who talked about Armageddon, and I was...
No, I didn't. I'm just saying I don't want there to be a war between, you know, basically the two Semitic peoples of this world, the Arabs and the Jews.
I certainly don't support such a war, and we're going to go back as we go back in history and try to figure out where this animosity began. But let me ask you something. You said when you called in at the end of the last hour, you said you don't trust the Israeli government for what it has to say.
Well, it's like Fox News or something. It's like you're in debate class. They're not actually being completely realistic. They're telling it completely painted from their side. Whenever I hear anything explained by the Israeli government or a spokesperson for the Israelis, or even anybody who's basically Jewish, and like I said, I'm half Jewish. I travel the world. I have a Jewish name. I don't want to be resented by cultures around the world because I have a Jewish name. I'm not in favor of hurting anybody or imprisoning or enslaving or, quarantining anybody. I would just like to see both sides live in peace. And whatever it takes to achieve that, I'd like to see that happen. And I think when Israel always talks about rockets, the rockets, it's not always the rockets. These people also need supplies. They need to live. They need building materials. And,
okay, let's take apart what you said, because it's important. It's important to take apart what you said. You said many things. Let me go back. You don't believe people should be in prison. Let's just be clear. You believe that murderers should be imprisoned, right?
I'm saying a population of people.
Okay, you don't believe that people who haven't committed a crime should be imprisoned, right?
Well, of course.
Right. Well, I do too. But you do believe that people who have committed crimes. Thor, you do believe people that have committed murder should be imprisoned, right?
Of course.
Okay. I just want to get that straight, because you're making it sound like non-murderers are put in prison by Israel.
No, not at all. But there also is collateral damage. They go after a murderer and
that's
they blow
true.
Up a city block.
Let's talk about collateral damage.
People.
Let's talk about collateral damage. It's interesting. I looked up the international law on that. I even looked up, there was a recent United Nations report, mostly condemning the United States, by the way.
I was on
Fox, actually, Friday, talking about this report. Here's what the report says, and it's very interesting. Under international law, you have an obligation to minimize, as best you can, civilian casualties. However, to the extent that terrorists immerse themselves among civilians, that is a war crime. And you are not required, very interesting, international law does not require you not to fight back if someone launches an attack to kill you and surrounds itself by civilians. You are to do your best to minimize civilian casualties.
That means innocent people die.
Well, that's right.
And I didn't write that law, and I'm not in favor of that law.
Let me ask you this.
Don't agree with that.
Do you believe that a nation attacked should fight back? Should we have, for example, after September 11th, should we have tried to find and arrest or kill the people that murdered 3,000 American citizens?
I would think so.
Okay, now what if we find them and they are busy in the middle of lobbing, let's say, a rocket, which they didn't have, but a rocket that would hit American soil, and we can stop this rocket, which is going to hit American soil and may well cause a bunch of American deaths, but to do that, they are there and they're outside of school. Now, obviously, we should try to pinpoint it as best we can and only hit those people. And we go and we shoot the rocket, and then some kids go out of the school and they're killed. That happens in wartime.
I see your point. Black ops would be the best solution to that problem. But the bigger solution is to not have a problem. This is where I'm trying to go with all this.
You don't think it's
never going to work if people are dying. There's always going to be resentment, and you're going to be breeding 10 terrorists for every terrorist you kill.
So the solution is not to ever fight back when you're attacked.
No, the solution is for them to come up with a diplomatic solution where they actually give back some land and allow Palestine to exist on its own, happily, with their own economy and no control on the part of Israel controlling what they can and cannot do. And I think that naturally, if the people were upwardly mobile and had an economy and had a life and tended their agriculture and this and that, they would learn to live side by side with Israel. And there have been moments in history since 1948 where neighbors have lived side by side with Israel.
When would that be?
Well, you named a few of the countries, Jordan.
Oh, right. Jordan, you know, and Egypt,
and so
yes.
And I think other countries in that region, including Palestine, could adopt that understanding and live harmoniously with their neighbor.
I'll tell you this, Thor.
Trade crosses, wars don't.
I'll tell you this, Thor. I think the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank is coming close to that. Their economy is good. They're showing that they can hold back the terrorist attacks because of the combination of the Israeli security wall and, I think, the good hard work of people of the Palestinian Authority. There have been no attacks. I want to, like, knock on wood or do something, but there have been no attacks in 2010. I believe there was just one. There may have been none in 2009. They're way down from the hundreds that occurred before Israel built the security wall. And I actually think, as the West Bank Arabs show that they can live peacefully with Israel, that they're likely to come toward a settlement. I don't think that's likely to happen in Gaza. And the reasons I want to talk about as I go back in history. But I want to appreciate your call, Thor. I thank you very much for calling in. We got to take a break. If you want to join the discussion, it's 888-653-7543. I've talked about the present. Now I want to go back and to try to figure out where this all began. Back after this. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. Mark Levine trying my best to do all of Israeli history backwards while standing on one foot. No, I'm not on one foot. Caller Thor was here before, and he was saying that he just doesn't believe anything that a lot of Israeli defenders say, Jews say. You know, I say this. If you don't believe a fact, look it up. Anything I say, any of you dispute, look it up. I think you'll find, and it may surprise you, particularly if you're skeptical about the Israeli government, that the Israeli government usually gets it right. You may not like what they do, but they'll tell you what they do. And indeed, if they do something that they don't want to discuss, they'll just say no comment rather than lie about it. Whereas, unfortunately, you'll find many of the Palestinian terror groups will just simply make something up. They'll say thousands were dead, and then it turns out that 20 were dead. And, you know, you can't even discuss whether or not the 20 dead was a good thing or a bad thing and how many were terrorists and how many were civilians, because people are marching for the thousands that are dead when they're not. So, you know, I would put Israeli truth-telling against its enemies' truth-telling any day. But I'm not telling anybody to take my word for anything. You don't agree with me? You don't know? Look it up. By the way, it's the American government, not just the Israeli government, that considers the IHH, the group on the Mavi Marmara, to be a terrorist organization. So how did we get here? How do we get to where Israel is, blockading Gaza? How do we get to where Israel is still has soldiers and settlements in the West Bank? What is Gaza? What is the West Bank? Where does this all come from? Well, let's go backward in history. Gaza, by the way, was Israel's great experiment to do exactly what Thor suggested they do. Leave the people alone, see if they can live in peace. In 2006, Israel left Gaza, every inch of Gaza, and built a seaport for Gaza, built an airport for Gaza, gave them aid, helped them get foreign contracts. Gaza was going to be a show state. The people of Gaza would rule themselves and would show they could rule themselves. What's the first thing the Gazans did? Well, of course, Israel evacuated every Jewish settlement in Gaza. They didn't trust that Jews would be safe in Gaza, so they forced their own citizens who'd lived there for 40 years. You might call them the indigenous citizens. I mean, they were born there, right? They evacuated those settlements entirely. And the Arabs, of course, the first thing they did when they took Gaza is they burnt all the synagogues down. That may be a suggestion that wasn't a good thing. Now, you know, they could have converted them to a mosque, right? They could have taken the Israeli settlements, the buildings, you know, and used them. No, they burnt them to the ground. That wasn't a good thing. But the real worst thing that happened was there was an election, a U.S.-sponsored election, where about 43% of the people of the West Bank and Gaza elected Hamas, a terrorist group bent on the destruction of Israel. Now, due to the complexities of the election, Hamas legitimately won that election, even though they had a minority. That happens sometimes. God knows it's happened in the United States. But what was not cool, what was not kosher, what was not democratic is what Hamas did next. After taking, legitimately taking power, they rounded up their opposition, Fatah, put them in jails, tortured them, and made sure there would never be an election again. That's not allowed in a democracy. And actually, it's very reminiscent of what Adolf Hitler did, who was also elected by a strong minority of the German people in 1933 before he burnt down the Reichstag, the German parliament, and rounded up his political enemies. So why is Israel blockading Gaza? Well, because Gaza, the government of Gaza, you know, the people of Gaza, by only 20-something percent support Hamas today. But because, oh, sorry, we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. So this is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie Marshall. Happy to do so and happy to take your calls at 888-653-7543. If you want to just comment on what I'm saying, you don't want to talk, you just want to write it down. Some people prefer to write over talking. Just go to my website, marklevineradio.com. Go right up at the top where it says a backwards look at the history of Israel. And click there to comment and leave your comments, and I'll be reading them throughout the broadcast, including some of them live on the air. I'm trying to explain why Israel is where it is, why the Palestinian Arabs are where they are, who are the indigenous peoples of Palestine, why is it that whenever Israel makes a mistake, people challenge Israel's right to exist, why is Israel the only nation on earth, the only nation on earth that faces annihilation? What did Helen Thomas mean when she said to the Jews, tell them to get the hell out of Palestine, go home to Germany and Poland, saying it's their land. It is clearly she meant Arab land rather than Jewish land. Let's go backwards in time. Why is Israel blockading Gaza? Why was there a war recently between Hezbollah, the Iranian-sponsored terrorist group in Lebanon, and between Israel and Hamas, the Iranian-sponsored terrorist group in Gaza? Interestingly, it's because Israel did exactly what friends of Israel, or at least people who are supportive of the Palestinian cause, have been claiming Israel should do ever for a long time. For 40 years now, people have been saying, good, well-meaning people, Israel, you need land for peace. Give up land for peace. Stop occupying Arab territory. Give it up for peace. Israel did that twice in the last decade. It vacated every last soldier from every last inch of Lebanon, as found by the United Nations, which is no friend of Israel. It left every little inch of Gaza. And what happened? Within a year or two of leaving both places, terrorist groups got into the exact places Israel left and launched devastating rocket attacks, raining rockets, Qassam rockets, hundreds and thousands of rockets on Israeli towns and cities. The entire one-third of the Israeli nation had to evacuate during the war with Lebanon. One-third. Can you imagine? One out of every three in a country having to leave their homes? So the sad thing is, well-meaning people say, Israel, just give up some land and you'll get peace. But every single time Israel gives up land, it gets more war. Every time. That's why I'm hopeful what's happening in the West Bank is the right way to do it. Slowly withdraw. Don't completely withdraw, because that leads to massive war and terrorist attacks. Instead, slowly withdraw. Show the Arab people they can rule themselves democratically without attacking Israel. And lead to eventual, yes, I hope, total withdrawal from all the Arab areas of the West Bank. I hope so. But to be clear, when Israel has done exactly what the Arab countries wanted to do, exactly what some on the left want Israel to do, when it removes itself entirely from these Arab areas, immediately terrorists come in and start trying to annihilate the state of Israel. I'm not saying they represent the people of Gaza or the people of Lebanon. I don't think they do. But whether they do or they don't, you can't have a terrorist state on your borders. America wouldn't accept that. Neither would France or England or Egypt or Saudi Arabia or any other country for that matter. So let's go back in time. Let's go back 10 years. Let's go back to 2000. if in 2010, well, the indigenous peoples of Israel are the Jewish people, what was it like in 2000? In 2000, the indigenous people of the state of Israel were the Jews, of course, who were, like today, a majority of the people in Israel. The Arabs were, like today, a majority of the people in the West Bank and Gaza. And in 2000, Bill Clinton worked very hard until his very last day in office to try to find peace between Israel and the Arab peoples of the West Bank and Gaza, who call themselves Palestinians. And he even offered Yasser Arafat, the leader of the Palestinians at that time, he offered Arafat a state on a silver platter. It was a contiguous state. It was the West Bank and Gaza. They even offered a road, an elevated highway that would travel across Israel, something that's never been done by any country ever. Israel would allow them to travel across Israel from the West Bank to Gaza and back and forth, even though it was over Israeli sovereign territory that no one disputed belonged to Israel. The territories would be such that Arafat got 96 or 97 or 98. Some say only 95%. It's disputed. Everyone says it's over 95 of the West Bank. And Arafat didn't give a counteroffer. He refused to give a counteroffer. They would even give the Arabs some kind of sovereignty over the ancient old city of Jerusalem, a city that has had more Jews than Muslims or Christians from the time of the early census, not just from the time of the Bible, but even from the time of the Turks in 1840. There were always more Jews in the Jewish holy city than Muslims or Christians, and even part of that would be given to the Arabs. Arafat said no dice. He started the Intifada. He started the suicide bombings. He started the series of events that led to the security walls, that led to the blockades, that led to the problems of today. So let's go back in time 10 years earlier as we march backward through time. Let's go back from 2000 to 1990. That was an interesting time. That was the time of the Oslo Peace Accords. The Palestinian Liberation Organization, run by Yasser Arafat, was living in Tunis. They were as far away from Israel as they'd ever been. They weren't in Lebanon. They weren't in Jordan. Yasser Arafat and his people, a lot of the same people who had committed some awful terrorist attacks in the 70s and 80s, were in Tunis. They were exiles. And only then did they sign a deal with Israel. A deal to recognize Israel. It was a heady time in 1990, the time of the Oslo Accords. At that time, the Palestinian Liberation Organization agreed to give Israel control over the sea lanes outside of Gaza, the same ones, by the way, that they were using when they boarded the ship, the Mavi Marmara. That was under the Oslo Accords. And to give up all of Gaza, and indeed part of the city of Jericho was the first part giving the West Bank, and that Israel would progressively leave territory after territory, and the Palestinians would forswear violence. Unfortunately, while Israel kept its bargain, the Arabs did not. There was violence. Now, you could argue that they couldn't control everybody. Maybe that's true. But that's where we were in 1990. Who were the indigenous peoples in 1990? Well, clearly Israel was indigenous for its part. And the West Bank and Gaza, well, those were mostly Arab. That's the people who lived there. So let's go back 10 years earlier. Find out how we got to this mess. 1980, the year 81, when Israel destroys the Osiris nuclear plant in Iraq. Good thing they did, or Saddam Hussein would have nuclear weapons. Back in 1980, Israel has the West Bank and Gaza, and that at that time was basically integrating them into one state, one single state, the same state that I now hear many supporters of the Arab side say that Israel should be one state. Well, it was back in 1980 because the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, was in Lebanon at that time. That was before they were exiled in the 1982 war where they were exiled to Tunis. They were in Lebanon and they were doing attacks across the border. But Israel, the West Bank, Gaza, the Arabs there were living some of the best they had. There were universities that Israel built. People were coming out of the refugee camps. And Israel was trying very, very hard to give a portion of the West Bank to Jordan, the country that had owned it before. Jordan didn't want it. That's mostly what was happening during the 80s. Israel trying to say, hey, Jordan, you want this? And Jordan says, no, no, we don't. So what happened 10 years before that in 1970? In 1970, Israel had just gotten the West Bank and Gaza, after a defensive war in 1967 when Egypt and Jordan and Syria tried to annihilate Israel. Israel in 1967 captured the West Bank, which was part of Jordan, and Gaza, which was part of Egypt, when those countries attacked Israel. At that time, by the way, liberals were very, very supportive of Israel. Very supportive. When Israel finally got into the old city of Jerusalem, Jews wept. The Jewish Temple Mount was in Jewish hands again, the holiest place in Judaism. Jews could now pray again at the Western Wall, where Jordan had denied them the opportunity to pray there for 20 years, from 1948 to 1967. In 1970, in 1980, Israel tried very hard to have democracy, to let the people of the West Bank and Gaza elect their own mayors. Really, they could do whatever they want except attack Israel. But at that time, the PLO was like Hamas. At that time, all the Palestinians were sworn to Israel's destruction. Israel even offered, after 1967, to give the entire West Bank, absent Jerusalem, and Gaza. In fact, some even suggested giving part of East Jerusalem over to the Arabs. The Arab states said no. They wanted war. To understand that and why, you have to go even before 1967, which I will do after the break. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine filling in for Leslie while she's on vacation. Toll-free number 888-653-7543. I'm trying to tell Israeli history backwards. Usually I start in the past and go forward to the present. This time I'm starting in the present and going forward into the past, trying to explain why we are where we are in the hope that people can understand why Israel has a sense of, let's just say, paranoia. As Prime Minister Menachem Begin once said, even paranoiacs have enemies. Israel believes that it will always be blamed for everything, no matter what it does, whether good or evil. There was a very famous song on the Israeli pop charts that was hit high up called "The Entire World is Against Us." Where do these views come from? Why does Israel feel the world is against it always? Why does Israelis go to sleep with memories of the Holocaust and wake up to memories of the Arab-Israeli conflict? I grew up in the 1970s and 1980s, which is the time period I'm talking about as I go back in time. And I remember the maps of Israel at that time. At that time, there was no separation between the West Bank and Israel, between Gaza and Israel. People could freely move wherever they wanted. There were no checkpoints. There were no blockades. And there was very little violence. The violence that existed all came from outside. It was the PLO attacking from Lebanon in the 1980s. It was the PLO attacking from Jordan in the late 1960s, until King Hussein of Jordan kicked them out in 1970, an event called Black September, and forced the PLO into Lebanon. To the extent there was war, the war was in Lebanon. The PLO would attack Israel. Israel would respond, occupy portions of Lebanon in 78, and then withdraw, occupy again in 82, going all the way to Beirut, until finally it forced the PLO into Tunis, where it would sit for 7 years until it finally decided to make peace with Israel. At this time, the Arabs of Israel and the Arabs of the West Bank and Gaza had more rights than any Arabs in any Arab country in the Middle East. Now, did they have a state? They did not. But when Israel would try to negotiate with Arab leaders in the West Bank, in Gaza, to give them a state, they would say, no, our leadership is only the PLO, only the Palestine Liberation Organization. I remember when a Christian Arab by the name of Elias Friedge, who was a mayor of Bethlehem, talked about negotiating with Israel. Yasser Arafat says, anyone who tries to negotiate without my permission will get two bullets in the chest. At which point the mayor of Bethlehem very quickly backed down and apologized to Yasser Arafat. So while the Palestinian Arabs were living pretty well in the 70s and 80s, they were not living as well as the Arabs of Israel, to be sure, but they were living better than any other Arabs in the Middle East, certainly freer, with more human rights and freedoms, and there were no checkpoints or blockades at that time. Universities were built and developed. There were also Israeli settlements developed during that time, mostly at that time along the borders from where there were raids and attacks. In some cases, Israeli settlements after 1967 were built where Jews used to live before they were kicked out in 1948 by Jordan. They would rebuild settlements like the Four Corners settlement by the Dead Sea. Its name will come to me. In any case, They rebuilt a lot of places where Jews had lived for centuries until they were forced out by the Jordanian army in 1948. And of course, from 67 on to today, Jews rebuilt the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem, the ancient Jewish quarter from which Jews had lived for thousands of years, cleared away all the detritus that had been put in front of the holiest Jewish place, the Western Wall, the retaining wall of the temple, still allowed, and Israel to this day allows Muslims, believe it or not, to police the holiest Jewish site in the world, the Temple Mount, on which the Muslims built a mosque and a shrine in the Middle Ages, allowed the Muslims to keep control of that region, and so that even occasionally during the Intifada, Arabs from the Temple Mount would actually throw rocks down on the Jews praying at the Western Wall. But all in all, it was a pretty heady time for Israel. Eventually, its enemies would be banished to Tunis. There was very little attacks. There was no Intifada. There was, this is prior before the 1987 Intifada, which began after a traffic accident. Certainly, there was unhappiness among Arabs of the West Bank, but at that time, they said their leader was Arafat, and Arafat didn't want to negotiate. So the question is, how did we get to this period? Well, we got there from the War of 1967. In 1966 and 1964, going back in time, Israel did not have the West Bank, did not have the eastern part of Jerusalem, did not have the holiest Jewish site. From 1948 until 1967, Jordan, a newly created country called Jordan, it had been called Transjordan because it was across the Jordan River, came in and conquered the area that was supposed to be the Palestinian state. Annexed the West Bank to itself. By the way, very few countries recognized that annexation, including most Arab countries rejected it. They said, Jordan, that doesn't belong to you. Egypt annexed the Gaza Strip. That's how the Gaza Strip got there. That all happened in the 1948 war. Egypt and Jordan controlled this territory for 19 years. And for 19 years permitted attacks on Israel, which didn't have the West Bank and didn't have Gaza, permitted attacks on the Jewish state. So all those people that say, give back the West Bank, give back Gaza, there'll be peace, should be remembered that for 19 years, Egypt had had Gaza, Jordan had the West Bank, and there was no peace. At that time, Egypt built camps, refugee camps for Arabs, and Jordan built refugee camps for its Arabs. By the way, they weren't called Palestinians then. The name Palestinian being referred to Arabs began around 1964 with the creation of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which was created by the Egyptian dictator in 1964, Abdel Nasser, and he put Yasser Arafat as its leader way back then, a guy who's from Cairo, though he claims to have Palestinian roots. We'll talk about where that name came from and what happened during those 19 years. But first, Dave from Hobart, California has called in, and I want to talk to him. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Time is running scarce, but several of us have been discussing something and wanting your input on it, and that is that does any other religion feel entitled to a homeland? And you were born French and Jewish and raised French and Jewish, how does that entitle you to anything of Israel?
Okay. Islam is very much believing of a homeland. They have a holiest city. It's called Mecca. They have a second holiest city. It's called Medina. They have a third holiest city. We're going to go back in time and see when that was created. It's called Jerusalem, and that was created in the Middle Ages after the Crusades. To Muslims, Arabia is sacred. It is their holy territory, and in fact, Jews are not allowed to go to Saudi Arabia. In fact, when Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State, wanted to go there, he had to get a special dispensation. U.S. troops who were defending Saudi Arabia, the Jewish troops had to hide it. So there's no question that among the Arabs, there is absolutely this idea of a Muslim holy land. I would argue that it's the same is true to a lesser extent among both Catholics and Orthodox Christians as well. I think Catholics, to them, Rome, the Vatican City, is very much a center. It's considered their Christian center. And I would think among Orthodox Christians, Byzantium, or today Istanbul, is very much considered their center. But I think to a lesser extent. And what's interesting about the Arabs is the whole idea of praying toward Mecca. Muhammad got that from the Jews who always prayed toward Jerusalem. So I think many people have holy places. I think you can find it among many religions throughout the globe, most that come from a specific place.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that. That does, it'll help us to ponder the question.
It's not an easy one. I also want to answer your question about Jews of France. I fully believe that Jews in France and Muslims in France should have all the civil rights that Christians in France do, recognizing that they live in a majority Christian country. France is actually on record as a Catholic country. There are French Protestants that aren't too happy about that. But I think it's different when you live in a minority. The Jews and Arabs of France are often and have often been mistreated throughout the ages. Actually, the Muslims are more likely to be mistreated today than the Jews, although both are mistreated. And I think when you're a minority in a country, you don't feel as secure as when you're in the majority. That's why, by the way, I've always supported an Arab state, a Jewish state, a Kurdish state, a French state, an English state. I think every people deserves at least one state, though not necessarily two or three. We're going to go back further in time in the last hour, all the way back to, well, the Middle Ages and beyond, when we come back.